From jewellery to coins, from electronics to energy, the global mining and oil industries touch every part of our lives. The extraction of natural resources such as oil, gas, copper or coal is a central feature of modern economies. While globalization creates new opportunities and more competitive prices for consumers, it also imposes new burdens on poor and marginalized communities who witness the exploitation of their natural resources without enjoying any of the benefits in terms of profit or much-needed development projects. While there has been much greater awareness of these concerns in recent years, poorly governed or conflict-ridden regions, indigenous lands and untouched environments continue to be exploited, sometimes at great human cost.
If this is not managed well, you end up with people's lives being affected, their livelihoods being affected, and that builds into a fair amount of anger and sometimes violence.
Father Seamus Finn heads the Justice, Peace and Integrity of Creation Office for the Oblates of Mary Immaculate in Washington, D.C. He has a keen interest in ethical investment and corporate responsibility, working with other faith-based organizations to keep such ethical and moral issues on the agenda of governments, corporations and financial institutions. Following a recent visit to Zambia, Malawi and the Democratic Republic of Congo, he talked to me about the increasing importance of monitoring the mining industries and their effects on communities across the developing world.
Absolutely. Increasingly important, I think, for a number of reasons. The mining companies are scouring the world looking for minerals, looking for oil, looking for gas, whatever it is they're searching for, because the demand is very high and the price is very high. And so this is a good time to take advantage of a good return for them. I think, secondly, they've obviously developed a lot of new technologies, so that in many instances now they're able to reprocess something that they might have left aside 30 years ago. Or they have technology that's actually letting them get to places that they were not able to get to before. And there is a lot of competition. I think it's not only now that there is one company coming around looking to sign a contract with a government or with a region. They're coming from North America, they're coming from Europe, they're coming from Australia, and they're coming from China.
How much is the church able to engage with this issue? How much experience does it have, perhaps, in trying to really work on what are the issues regarding the local communities?
I think the church's opportunity, from my perspective, I think is twofold. I think, and maybe in the first one, we are doing some catch-up, beginning back with previous Holy Father. He did talk about, back as early as 1990, some of it in connection with his, I think, relationship with the Green Patriarch, Bartholomew. He did begin to talk about the ecological dimension of the Catholic vocation and did begin to introduce into some of his addresses different thoughts about ecology, the environment, the earth, and trying to also integrate some of the wisdom of, I think, the indigenous and the native traditions. And the present Holy Father has continued that. Perhaps, I suppose, what's lacking and what we still don't have is maybe a fully articulated vision of a theology of creation that fits within the Catholic framework. And by that I'm seeing we often make reference to human beings as being created in the image and likeness of God. But our reading of Genesis is also saying that the creation, all of creation, is a reflection of who God is, and it is the primary revelation of God to the world, is the created order. So I think we're beginning slowly to capture some of that wisdom, recapture it, because it's found in some of the great spiritual writers. And I think hopefully we can begin to present it and offer it to the Catholic faithful around the world. Because I think most of all, while we may not have technical solutions or actual scientific solutions on a number of these, we do need to present a vision that is informed by faith about natural resources. And I think that's a really important role that the church has. I think working with local communities, the church has lots of experience, whether it has to do with farming or whether it has to do with local microfinance, microcredit, crafts, all of that sort of stuff. So that experience is there, and I think we can bring that to the local communities in terms of bringing people together, getting them to take seriously, you know, what the issue is, being serious about collecting information and facts and data, and obviously trying to look for solutions to the challenges that a mining company presents when it comes into a local community. And I think you see many experiences of that across the world. lots of experiences of in Latin America where sometimes this has gone well and sometimes not so well. And so we had huge loss of life last year in Peru. So if this is not managed well, you end up with people's lives being affected, their livelihoods being affected, and that builds into a fair amount of anger and sometimes violence. And so how is the church able to, I think, create a climate and an environment where there can be some agreements between the company and the local communities and some modus operandi going forward? It may not always be possible, but at least one needs to be able to create the climate and the process.
In practical terms, you quite like to see some of the bishops coming together and drawing up perhaps guidelines or some kind of pastoral around this issue of natural resources, wouldn't you?
Yeah, our research suggests that a number of individual bishops, particularly those who have a mine or an oil company or a gas exploration company in their diocese, have written letters. I think my concern about that quite often is, and these are good letters, I don't want to dismiss the importance of it because they're offering guidance to the local community, is that it always begs the question about where the bishop's conference is on the issue, because natural resources, in a certain sense, are the patrimony of the entire country. And quite often they're controlled by the federal government or the sovereign government, and they're the ones that sign the contracts. They're the ones that collect the taxes or the tariffs or the fees. And quite often, they're not terribly responsive to the local community. And so, in one sense, you're asking the local community where the mine is to kind of bear the burden of the imposition of the mine, and the entire country benefits from the income or the taxes that are collected. And so I think it's important that a bishop's conference reflect, in terms of their own individual areas, about unnatural resources. And natural resources, as we all know, maybe in minerals it's a little, they're quite located, but natural resources have to do with, you know, mines, have to do with water, have to do with land, have to do with air. All of those things are quite, don't necessarily always respect boundaries. And so guidance, I think, is important at a national level. And I think it's important at an international level. I think perhaps the conferences and the dioceses of Africa can learn from the experience of Latin America, where there's been a lot more mining, and perhaps they've had the opportunity to learn. And so we're looking for, hopefully, that they might share some of their wisdom and their principles. And I think also, for me, in Washington, it is important at a global level, because we have some major actors like the World Bank, and like the international financial institutions and the international development institutions that are continually looking to improve their standards and their criteria. Are they going to invest in a specific project? Are they going to give a loan for the exploration of specific resources? So they're also looking for not only the value of the project, but they're also looking for both guidelines in terms of the social impact on local communities, the impact on the environment, the outcome for the people in the area, and the sustainability of the project.
Let's look a little bit at this impact on the local community. You talked about the environment, the risk of environmental damage. We've seen some worst-case scenarios, but what exactly is the most worrying impact, if you like, on the local communities of these kinds of projects?
Well, I think there are probably three or four, I think. I mean, the most immediate one, obviously, is that it's mines, by their nature, are very intrusive. It's not like building a small factory or opening a small shop. They're very big operations, and they take over huge amounts of land. And how they, you know, their transportation trucks and all the other heavy equipment that they use is quite intrusive in a local community. And so it changes people's daily lives in a significant way. Then, depending on what it is they're mining, obviously there are real concerns about, first of all, the normal concerns about dust and the impact that can have on public health, on people, on the quality of the air that people are breathing. And then I think another issue is, what is it that they're mining? I think it's a much different concern if you're mining ore for copper as if you're mining something in relationship to uranium. So that's a whole other level of concern. I think then, in the longer term, it's a question of, yes, you can have all these safeguards about how you're extracting the minerals, how you're processing the minerals. What are you doing with the leftover tailings, the leftover residue and the chemicals? What's the impact on the water? And what safety precautions have been put in place so that you can be looking at, if the wrong methods of disposal of the acid-treated product is taken, you can be looking at severe impacts on children 20 years down the road. that may, in terms of mercury in the water system, groundwater penetration usually takes a long time, but if the safeguards aren't there, eventually it's going to get into the water system. So those are real concerns, I think, that people in the local community have in terms of their own livelihood, their health, and the environment. There are lots of other concerns as well, I think, that are maybe more immediate, but you know, a mining company generally creates a lot of jobs when they first come into the area because there's lots of stuff to be done. And then there is a point at which all of the infrastructure is in place and many people have to be laid off because it's then back into just the operation of the mine. Much of it is quite mechanical. And that doesn't always create good feelings in terms of who retained their job and who lost their job. And some of these jobs in running a mine tend to be, you know, require some professional training. There's also a lot of migration issues. A mine is generally going to attract a lot of people new people into the area who may be from the same, you know, region, but then it's also going to attract some people from other countries who are looking for jobs. And that puts a strain on depending on the size of the nearest village or town or city. Those are real demands on the local community and in terms of its impact. And it often tends to take place rather quickly. It's not something that happens, you know, over a period of years. It happens over a period of months. So I think those are the most ones that come immediately to mind. And then I think how the mining community manages its relationship with the local community and how the local community relates to the mine is a process, I think, around which, you know, people have learned a lot. And so it's important to set up a mechanism where that conversation is open, is ongoing, is honest, is fair. Because obviously some people benefit more than others from this kind of industry.
Now, for years, we've heard how the conflict over precious natural resources in Africa has fueled conflicts. Mm. Is this still the case today?
I'd say it's still certainly the case in parts of the DRC. I think it's less so in a number of other countries. And I think it's a combination of events that have helped to move that along. I think maybe there are fewer open civil conflicts going on than what we had previously in places like Angola and the DRC and other parts of Central Africa. But they flare up occasionally. But I think also there's been a significant amount of pressure on the companies who produce cell phones, companies who produce computers, the end users of the actual product that's extracted from the ground, to do something. The customer is actually saying, look, I don't want to buy your cell phone or I don't want to buy your computer if I think you've got something, components in there or chemicals in there that, you know, have contributed to violence or loss of life or abuse in different parts of the world. So the companies are becoming more attentive to this and they're actually trying to look at the supply chain. In other words, do any of the material, any of the compounds, any of the stuff we are using here, when we actually buy it and pay for it, is it actually going to any paramilitary groups? And therefore, are they using it to procure arms? Are they using it to wreak havoc and hurt local communities? So I think there's a good amount of, some of those mechanisms are rather new, but there is certainly a significant amount of pressure by the companies on the supply chain to diminish, I think, for them at least to be clear that they are not using products that are contributing to violence or have been, you know, stolen from a local community.
My thanks there to Father Seamus Finn, head of the Justice, Peace and Integrity of Creation Office for the Oblates of Mary Immaculate in Washington, D.C. And to find out more about this issue, you can go to the Confronting Global Poverty page of the U.S. Bishops Conference website. That's www.usccb.org.